Dear friends of the Schiller Institute, distinguished guests from many countries, we are coming here together at the fourth conference of the Schiller Institute within less than 5 months because we are determined to inspire a new paradigm in the history of mankind, a paradigm which is reflecting the true identity of the human species. Man as a cognitive being whose identity is that of a creative species, where each individual on the planet, in principle, has a limitless potential for self-perfection. The sense of identity must be governed by that innate creative potential, not only to develop our own creative abilities to all our potential abilities innate in us, but to do so with the explicit desire to contribute one's own life to the further development of the human species as a whole. So that when our own life comes to an end, since we are all mortal beings, that we can die with the certainty that we have contributed with all our ability to the progress and progression of mankind through our contribution to the best of all our possibilities. That we have with our life added something to ennoble our species. And it is that vision that in the new paradigm, the relations among human beings will be guided by agape, that the relation among nations will be guided by that we are happy about the development of the other nation, and that we understand that harmony, concordance on the planet and in the future beyond that is only possible through the development of all human beings and all nations and in a relationship, in a vice versa relationship. Now, the future paradigm has to be guided by love for mankind, by compassion, and the joy about the realization of the creative potential of all other individuals. In the same way, like we are joyful about the compositions of Beethoven, or the great poems and dramas of Schiller, or the discoveries of Leibniz and Einstein, or the elevated perspective of our astronauts and cosmonauts. When we as human beings relate to each other like scientists do, discovering a new principle, discussing the hypothesis how mankind can progress, as artists communicating metaphors about a better future condition of civilization. Now, this new paradigm must also be guided by a new method of thinking. It is the method which Beethoven has called so streng wie frei, as rigorous as free. It's Schiller's idea of achieving freedom through necessity as the only condition where, and the only condition where this is possible is the beautiful soul, according to Schiller, the person who does necessity with joy, who finds his freedom in fulfilling necessity, and for whom duty and compassion are the same thing. And as Schiller correctly said, the only individual for whom this is possible is the creative genius. Now, this image of man must be the basis of the new paradigm, if mankind is supposed to survive. And it is only from this positive vision of the future that we will mobilize the moral strengths and courageous energy to replace this present paradigm, which is completely based on depravity and evil. Now, with the present paradigm, it is very clear that we are, as a civilization, on the direct road into a catastrophe. We are experiencing right now the full disintegration of the transatlantic financial system. Between the quantitative easing, hyperinflation, and quantitative stealing, we see right now the most brutal expropriation scheme expressed in what the new head of the Eurogroup, Dijsselbloem, called the Cyprus template, which means the total destruction of the real economy for the sake of maintaining the life expectancy of this casino society for just a few weeks or months. It is combined with a violent attack on the living standard and life expectancy of the population. It is killing people by the millions. The second fundamental danger, which is coming from the same source, is the danger of thermonuclear war, where we are presently on the verge of, because even if the crisis around the Korean Peninsula can be contained, which people in that peninsula hope very much, if you look at the totality, you have the Syria situation quickly spinning out of control. You have the danger of a strike against Iran, and it could very well be that Southwest Asia develops into the cockpit for World War III. Now, it seems that in light of all of these dangers, which everybody can see, nevertheless, the governments of this world are not doing anything efficient to get the world on a different course. So it seems that civilization is almost on an autopilot toward self-destruction. In light of this mortal danger, there is almost no public debate about what is really important. The public debates, as they are raised by governments, politicians, media, are completely trivial in light of what we are really in front of. In reality, we have a truly murderous expropriation scheme underway. We are threatened with a new fascism. We are losing democracy. We are losing our constitutions. The trade unions are losing all the labor rights which have been fought for literally centuries. We are losing the social welfare state. We are losing all accomplishments of civil and human rights without that there is a public outcry going on. It is exactly the process which started really with the death of Franklin D. Roosevelt, and which was basically a fight where the oligarchy was determined to eliminate the axioms which had made Franklin D. Roosevelt possible. And I must say that I'm very happy that Lynn is here, because if you reflect over the last 40 or even 50 years, or in Lynn's case, even longer, he has been the one individual who has pointed to each change of the paradigm in the negative direction. It was Lynn who, on the 15th of August 1971, in an absolutely visionary way, said, if this paradigm is continued, and if we are continuing on this road of monetarism, which was really the beginning with Nixon's decoupling the dollar from the gold standard by eliminating the fixed exchange rates and by creating the casino bubble, or starting this money creation in offshore islands. And Lynn basically said, if we continue on this road, it will lead to a new depression and a new danger of fascism. Now, if you look at the series of deregulations which took place in the 70s and in the 80s, ever more away from production toward speculation, the next major blow was the repeal of Glass-Steagall in 1999. This was really the absolute escalation of this present bubble economy, the creation of the so-called creative financial instruments, the derivative market, and then came the final blowout in July 2007, where Lynn made the famous webcast on the 25th of July, 1 week before the crisis erupted, by saying the system is hopelessly bankrupt and all what we are going to see now is how the different elements of the destruction will come to the surface. Lynn immediately introduced the Homeowners and Banking Protection Act, which would have stopped the disintegration right there. We had at that point a tremendous support in the Congress, in the mayors, in the state legislators in the United States, but you had the brutal intervention of such evil individuals like Felix Rohatyn and others representing Wall Street, and you know the Congress at that point capitulated. Shortly thereafter, on the 15th September 2008, you had the GAO, the systemic collapse of the system threatening through the collapse of Lehman Brothers and AIG. And for a very short period of time, the international governments and financial community and many others were so shocked that they considered for a very brief moment to return to the Roosevelt idea of a Bretton Woods in the form of a new Bretton Woods. But instead, already at the next G8 meeting, they decided to go for the most gigantic bailout process ever. In the United States and in Europe, they literally put in trillions of dollars and euros, maybe up to 30 trillion altogether. And I think some of you may still remember the famous words of Federal Chancellor Merkel, because at some point she said, we have not to worry because the EU has provided us with a magnificent toolbox. So we will take these tools as they are needed, and these tools will be sufficient to fix the problem. So this EU toolbox was designed after the British example, and Merkel declared that you all can be confident because your savings, at least up to 100,000 euro, will be absolutely safe. Now, the first tool which was taken out of this toolbox was the bailout mechanism, which was essentially a scheme to transform private debt of high-risk speculators into public debt. It was the idea to turn the speculative gambling debt into state debt. So all of a sudden the states were indebted while the managers received big boni, and the banks, being saved this way, continued the speculation against the very states which had bailed them just out, impoverishing the population ever more because now the state debt had to be compensated with draconian austerity programs in the tradition of Brüning. And the sake of the holy cow of balanced budget, fiscal pact, and, you know, so they proceeded with absolutely brutal cuts. So as a result, the countries of Southern Europe are dying. Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal have experienced a complete destruction of their economy. And then came the Cyprus crisis and the famous Cyprus template, as it was called by Dijsselbloem. Now, first, they had the proposal to tax the deposits of up to 100,000 by 6.75% and almost 10% for those above, which was rejected by the Cyprus parliament. So then, finally, they said the Cyprus template is what we mean by the bail-in tool. Now, in investigating this more deeply, it turns out this tool was in preparation for a long period of time. It was discussed and worked out in a paper by the Bank of England and the Federal FDIC in the United States. It was supposed to steal deposits on behalf of the so-called GCFI, the globally significant systemically important financial institutions. And if you look at that paper of the BOE FDIC, it has a relatively tame language as compared to a paper by the EU Commission already written in 2011, namely the discussion paper on debt write-down tool bail-in. So what they basically prescribed there is rather than to rely on the taxpayers for another round of bailouts, they came up with the scheme to stop the contagion this way by allowing the public authorities to spread unmanageable losses of banks to the shareholders and creditors, depositors. And they called this the debt write-down tool. Now, this tool should be efficient and avoid any circumvention. But the most scandalous formulation in this text is, quote, liabilities originated on derivative exposure in principle be included in the scope of the tool. However, the effective application of the tool to those exposures is not as legally straightforward as for other types of liabilities, and it may raise some concerns in terms of financial stability. Now, if you free that language from the usual banker's gobbledygook, what it actually says is burning the derivative debt might be legally too complex to carry out and have grave implications for the financial stability, or it would blow out the system right away. So therefore, let's pay the derivative debt and instead seize the depositor's money, which is legally easier to take because they cannot resist it, and it doesn't pose a grave risk for financial stability. Theft of the depositors is easier, and it really gives new meaning to the famous word of Bertolt Brecht, who I, as an exemption, want to quote, who says, you know, it's one thing to rob a bank, to rob a bank to make a lot of money, but if you create a bank, you make a lot more money, and everybody who brings their money into a bank from now on should know, you know, the moment you give your money to the bank owns the money de facto and is at liberty to grab it. Because this is what this Tsipras template really means. Now, the confiscation of bank accounts, either in the form of a bail-in, like in Cyprus, where in one case they cut 40% of one bank and all others of above 100,000. And 100,000, you know, you should not fall for the spin because in the bailout, well, 100,000 is easily the operating capital of any small firm when they have to pay wages, material costs, and so forth. So it's really a complete deliberate destruction of the economy. This is one form, and the other form is like in Spain, where they've encouraged or, you know, basically forced more or less more than 1 million households into buying so-called preferential stocks, the preferentes of banks. And then in the case of one large bank, Bankia, they just said, sorry, you know, we write down the debt of this bankrupt bank, so all of you who have stocks lose more than 99%, and, you know, so too bad. So that is just simple theft. It's a crime. It's robbery. And this is exactly what preceded in 1993 the implementation of Glass-Steagall. In 1933, in the case of the National City Bank and National City Corporation, also the depositors and employees were forced to buy stocks, and then the National City Corporation speculated in these to make money, and those who were insiders in these speculations took a lot of money out of it and filled their pockets with it. Then in the wake of the crash of 1929 and in the following years, 1930, 1931, these depositors lost most of their money, the life savings were gone, while the National City Bank remained open. It was one case of a too big to fail. So this proceeded until FDR came and also PCORA and initiated the PCORA hearing. Now, Franklin D. Roosevelt closed all the banks and declared a banking holiday for 11 days, made in that period the thorough inspection of all 14,000 banks in the United States, forced them to write off worthless securities, and 4,000 of these banks were closed permanently. Other categories of banks that were sound but lacked the liquidity were provided that liquidity through the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, and then it was allowed to the sounder banks to reopen again. Under the Glass-Steagall Act, the commercial banks from now on were quarterly inspected by the Federal Reserve to make sure that they would not return to the gambling procedure like before. Now, PCORA describes it in great detail in a very nice booklet called Wall Street Under Oath, how he interrogated all the CEOs of the big Wall Street banks and how basically amazing admissions came out that they didn't even know the scope of taxes because they had never paid them in their whole life and things like that. So if you look at how the Glass-Steagall Act and the PCORA Commission ended the depression in the United States, and if you compare what these EU guidelines are proposing, you can see that it is the exact opposite. That basically what the EU is now preparing is a guideline which was admitted by Olli Rehn to make the Cyprus template the new guideline for the entire EU, which can be applied whenever you have to save the so-called systemically relevant banks. Now, that means that the derivative speculation will be protected, and they want to have absolutely murderous austerity for the people and the nations. And if you only look at the result this has caused so far, you have Greece, which has been turned into a third world country, where young children and students are looking in the garbage cans, where children come to the schools and they cannot follow the school teachers because they are malnourished, they are hungry, they can't concentrate. Italy, the suicide rate is going up. Greece and Spain has a youth unemployment of almost 60%. Portugal is disintegrating, and in Cyprus, only in the short period of the application of the Cyprus template, the life expectancy, according to economists from Greece, has gone up from an average age of 80 years to 75 years. In Great Britain, there is going on right now the total slashing of the social system. 660,000 households who have received subsidies for their rent have now to move to smaller apartments or face a reduction of their subsidies. But since there are not enough small flats and since the free advice to legal service has been cut, many of these people end up in the streets. The social payments are no longer indexed to inflation. And even the government admits that all these measures will send at least 200,000 children below the poverty line. At the same time, they have increased the tax for millionaires. They have reduced the income tax for millionaires by 5%, which means they will earn 100,000 more per year. Large categories of disabled people no longer are recognized to be disabled and have to pay for the care and transport themselves. In many cases, 5 or 6 services are cut out at the same time. The needy are no longer receiving even the tiny amount of money. Instead, they get food stamps or coupons for the soup kitchen so that they cannot even dispose over the ridiculous 200 pounds or whatever they get. In the United States, the same thing is going on with the new Obama budget, Obama wants to cut 1.2 trillion over 10 years. Out of this 400,000 billion from Medicare, which is killing old people, 200 billion from pension funds, 380 billion from the so-called chain CPI. That is a behavior economist gobbledygook, which says that if you have an increase in the price of beef, well, then just buy chicken and you won't feel the inflation in the beef price. And this is only the beginning. The Cyprus template gives people a very mild pretaste of things to come. That basically, when after the Lehman Brothers crisis in 2008, nothing was done to write off the toxic waste, and nobody knows the exact figure, because all of these derivatives are traded in OTC arrangements over the counter, so they're not, no central bank, no government, no authority knows the amount. Then you have the huge sector of the shadow banking, which is probably bigger than the official sector. And Jacques Attali in 2010 said it may be as much as $1.4 quadrillion. Other figures are $700 trillion. And alone in Europe, the derivative market is supposed to be 230 trillion of outstanding derivative contracts. So if this derivative bubble bursts, you have a larger blow up than it was threatening to come after Lehman Brothers, because the whole system is much more filled with hot air and virtual money than it was now. It could come then to a complete systemic collapse. And if the template, one has to consider that the template remark by Dijsselbloem was not really an accident, but it was a part of a strategy to get the population used to the idea that their income will be stolen. Because this is the only thing which is left, to take the savings and deposits of the population. And it should be also clear that under these conditions, the deposits up to 100,000 are not safe. Because they cannot. If you calculate all the people who have up to 100,000, the banks in no way can ever pay this. Because we are looking at several trillion, which would have to be compensated alone in Germany for people who have these savings. And this money is not there, except if you print it, which is actually happening already with the quantitative easing of Draghi, Bernanke, and now also the Bank of Japan. So if you look at these things together, you have the brutal, murderous troika austerity, the bail-in bank robbery, and you have now the entire world financial system at a hopeless point of collapse. So therefore, the only remedy which we have to discuss at this conference, and I want people to, through the different presentations today and tomorrow, that we go out of this conference with the absolute resolve that Glass-Steagall must be implemented, and it can be implemented exactly as Franklin D. Roosevelt provided the example, because this is the absolute necessary first step to prevent an unimaginable social explosion which, you know, nobody can imagine the consequences of. Now, it is also obvious that the EU Commission, the Obama administration, and the British oligarchy in general, they want to use this crisis to go for a final dictatorship. When the new U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, Liu, was in Europe and met with the EU Commission, they issued a joint statement that they want to use the new, quote, resolution tools, which is exactly the Cyprus template, and to go for a banking union, the collectivization of the debt, a full-fledged fiscal union, and a political union, i.e. A political dictatorship in Europe. Now, in southern Europe, the people have already understood that this is a fight for their survival. The measures implemented increase the death rate. There is a complete destruction of the real economy. In Germany, there is discontent, supposedly only a fatigue by the population to be the paymaster for the whole thing. And in the meantime, the media and the politicians are still successful by playing the different peoples against each other. So the media portray the Greeks as lazy, the Cyprus crisis as being caused by the Russian oligarchs. In Spain, Mrs. Merkel is pictured with a mustache. And if you look at all of these things, it's like a blind man and the elephant, where one man says the elephant is a thick column. It happens to be the man who touches the leg. Another one says, oh no, the elephant is a flexible snake. It's the one who touches the trunk. Or the third one says, no, the elephant is a thin cord. He happens to have the tail. Now, it is high time that we throw off these blinds from our eyes. The monster which we are dealing with, which is threatening the life on this planet, is the British Empire. The name of the game is population reduction. Every 5 seconds, a child under 10 years of age is dying for no good reason, because the present planet would have the potential to feed easily 12 billion people or more. But the Queen of England and Prince Philip have stated repeatedly that their aim is to reduce the human population from 7 to 1 billion. And, you know, Hitler already gave the example that through a conscious starvation, you can weaken groups of people up to the point of extinction. So what we are seeing right now in terms of the Third World, and now increasingly in terms of Europe and the United States, is exactly that kind of deliberate starving people to death. But that British Empire, which is really the combination of the financial institutions, the central banks, the investment banks, the hedge funds, the private equity funds, the insurance companies, that British Empire wants the global domination and basically wants to destroy once and forever the sovereign nation state. And it is clear that from that standpoint, Russia and China are the biggest obstacle. Now, the policy of regime change, which is now operating after it destroyed Iraq and Libya, operating against Syria and Iran, really is aimed at the total confrontation with Russia and China. And if you look at the NATO and EU expansion after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the expansion and building of the US anti-missile shield in Eastern Europe, it is very, very clear with the Patriot deployment in Turkey, with the development of the so-called Asia pivot, that what is in preparation is a first strike capability against Russia and China. Now, this was admitted in the official journal of the U.S. Air Force called Strategic Review Quarterly about 2 months ago, where they claim that the modernization of nuclear weapons, the delivery systems and targeting in the meantime has become so precise that it would be possible to take out with a first strike the nuclear arsenal of any nuclear opponent without nuclear fallout. Now, if you remember both the UN Charter, but especially the Nuremberg Tribunal, which clearly defined that the not only a war of aggression, but already the intention of a war of aggression commits a war crime. I think that what we are looking at is war crimes. And, I mean, we have to bring these people to responsibility. The war against Iraq, which was completely based on the lies of Tony Blair, who was the author of the famous memo which was used by Colin Powell in his speech in the United States, was all lies. Afghanistan, all based on lies. Right now there is a big motion by the families of the September 11th World Trade Center who demand that the 28 pages, which are still to the present day classified, have to be released. And, you know, the truth will come out. The 11th of September was not what the official line is, and therefore the whole Afghanistan war was based on lies because it was not an attack by an enemy force on Afghanistan requiring Article 5 of NATO. The war against Libya was a war crime. What is going on in Syria right now is a murderous policy against a legitimate government of Syria. And it is not even Al-Qaeda and Al-Nusra. The drug czar of Russia, Viktor Ivanov, just made a statement saying that the entire rebels in Syria are financed by a transnational crime cartel financed from the heroin from Afghanistan. Now, one of our speakers on the podium, Bruce Fein, made an argument in New York that war legitimizes the killing of an enemy, which, if it would not happen in the case of war, would be murder. Now, since all the wars were based on lies, that makes the initiators of these wars, that makes the British Empire, and it makes the present administration of the United States de facto war criminals. If it comes to the danger of a thermonuclear war, which is the immediate danger of the extinction of the entire human species, then, you know, the crime is a bigger one than at any time in history before. And if we cannot change this paradigm, which is extremely close, then we are not smarter than the dinosaurs who were extincted together with about 98% of all civilizations 65 million years ago. So therefore, let me come back to the beginning. We must have a new paradigm if mankind is to survive. The absolute necessary, irreplaceable first step must be Glass-Steagall, where we implement the Glass-Steagall law in the United States first, and then following in every European country and possibly other countries around the globe, and simply wipe out all these trillions, hundreds of trillions of derivative debt and other toxic waste. Well, Glass-Steagall must be then followed by a credit system, which is paying tribute to the idea that a credit system is not based on money. Money has no intrinsic value. And if you need a proof for that, you just have to remember the December of 1923, where people used the Reichsmark bills to use it as wallpaper because that was the cheapest paper which people could have. Now, a credit system, on the other side, is the means to organize the future, to organize the prolonged, continuous existence of society with the only aim to unleash the creative potential of the population and to increase the productivity for the common good. So what does the sustainable existence of civilization then mean? Well, I think we have to remember that on the 15th of February, the events of Chelyabinsk in the Urals, where not only the asteroid passed by the Earth, which was known, but you had a meteor shower which was not detected by any agency in the West or in the East, was a very useful wake-up call that our planet is not a self-evident phenomena sitting, you know, where you can, you know, just be concerned about the life on the planet, but that we are situated in a very vulnerable moment in the processes which are governed entirely by the solar system and the galaxy. Now, yesterday, the Russian Vice President Rogozin made a proposal to make the meteorite danger a leading topic at the G20 conference taking place right now, or which will take place in St. Petersburg. Quote, "The scope of the task of neutralizing the asteroid danger will require a concentration of global intellectual resources and the scientific and technological capabilities of Russia, the United States, and other countries, which will require collaboration. And that cooperation will promote trust between the countries and, as a byproduct, the condition for resolving the conflict over the ballistic missile defense crisis." Now, this is the option, because if we move civilization away from the present thinking of, you know, defending the past, defending a bankrupt monetary system, and start thinking about how we can now invest in the kinds of things which we absolutely need as a civilization to survive, we have to think about the world from the lofty perspective of the astronauts, the cosmonauts, where several, after returning from space travel, reported that when you look from the outer space at our blue planet, that you don't see borders, you don't see military blocks, but you see actually one humanity. Now, I believe absolutely that if we get rid of these present policies through the combination of policy measures which we propose, Glass-Steagall credit system, global reconstruction, that the present paradigm, which is based entirely on depravity, on greed, on a complete lack of compassion for the suffering of billions of people, on finding pleasure in sadistic entertainment, that these will be overcome as the childhood of mankind, and that we will outgrow it. We will outgrow it in the same way as little nasty four-year-old boys who hit and kick the knee of their neighbors eventually outgrow that nastiness and become scientists and artists and become human beings. I believe that through the development of man, the idea of Nicolaus of Cusa, that sin is the lack of development, that evil can be overcome by the intellectual development and especially the aesthetical education of man, when we reach what Kraft-Ehrike called the extraterrestrial imperative, namely that man becomes species in space, that we believe that we will leave this behind us. Now, for those who are believers in the fact that there is a creator, I think that the true identity of mankind is to be imago viva Dei, the living image of man, of God, where we as instruments of God carry on the process of creation on the planet and beyond. And for those who don't believe that there is a creator, well, you have to study the laws of the universe more deeply and then come eventually to the same conclusion like Kepler, who said the more you study the beauty of the laws of the universe, the more you come to the conclusion that there is a magnificent plan behind all of that. So with this optimism, let's proceed with this conference. And after this conference, go out with the absolute passionate love for mankind, that we are not allowing this beautiful species, which is capable of such fantastic achievements, to die just because we have now reached a complete low point, and that we will be, with the passion for mankind, with the love for mankind, a pretaste for what future generations will perfect.